This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right center, that one is way back, and that ball is gone. A grand slam for Tommy Pham in his first at bat back with the Cardinals. He has broken it open. It's 8-1 St. Louis.
Eric Nadell with the call. That, unfortunately, is the way back and forth, then back and forth. And that is how we open up the Hump Day edition of Sean, RJ, and Bobby live from Oxnard, California, on your home of the Cowboys and Rangers. It is 105.3 The Fan, and we are brought to you by Sagamore Spirit Rye Whiskey, Best Buy Windows and Siding, and Guardian Caps. We are live on the Uber One Fan Cam. The MLB trade deadline has come and gone. The Rangers lose 8-1, but we added a little bit of relief, RJ Choppy.
Andrew Chafin, they were able to get him. This guy just exudes sex appeal and masculinity. Toxic masculinity. This is my kind of guy right here,
sure,
man. Absolutely. They give up a couple of pitchers in exchange for a guy with 41 relief appearances as an ERA. Just a tick over 3. It's a 3.16, but he is older. I mean, he's not a kid. He's 34 years old. This is not somebody that's going to be here for the next 10 years by any stretch. But they do what a lot of teams in Major League Baseball try to do this time of year, and that's bolster their bullpen. They think they did that.
Yeah,
didn't work last night because the bullpen gave up the big granny.
It's the Ranger killer, Tommy Pham. He kicked their ass during the World Series. He was the only guy on the Diamondbacks consistently doing it. Did it again last night. His first game there with the Cardinals. Look, it's fine. Sure. I thought the idea, though, was if you're going to go out and get a reliever, they wanted a more controllable reliever instead of a guy who's expiring. But, he's a fun character, exudes his sex appeal, and that's all you could really ask for from the Rangers at the trade deadline was how do we improve our sex appeal? That's what they got.
They're all in.
They're something.
They had a bunch of guys. They wanted a bunch of guys on expiring contracts. This team is all in.
I liked the very strong opinions that you had, Bobby, in all of your email takes last night. Take it away with your first one. Just unload. It's an unload Wednesday.
Yeah, like here's the biggest problem to me is that they are. This is such a wasted opportunity that they've actively sacrificed being a better baseball team in 2025 with what they did yesterday. They had an opportunity to move on from several expiring veterans in a market where it seemed like every hour we were getting texted from Jared Sandler, go, do you see this overpay that people are paying for this pitcher out here? Oh, my gosh. If the Rangers got involved in this, they might be able to get an overpay, too. And they didn't. They sat there. They have bought into their own BS. And this baseball team, they're not going to win a title this year. They've sacrificed, like I said, being potentially, I don't know, 6-7 wins better next year in the name of going 85-77 and getting swept in the first round of the playoffs and just getting a shot at getting swept in the first round of the playoffs.
So driving home from practice, we had the awesome debate in the car, very opposite takes from RJ and Bobby. Bobby, you just heard it, saying this team, they'd get swept, to RJ Choppy talking about World Series if they were able to get in. So we had not winning one game to World Series predictions in the car ride home from Cowboys practice.
I mean, that's the part for me. Like, if this team were to find a way to sneak in, They're a team. Nobody wants to face DeGrom and Eovaldi at the top of a rotation in a short series. You're going to see them twice in seven games. You're going to have to beat one of them at least one time, because the chances are you're not going to get swept in the other games. So, to me, that is a complete trump card on everything. You know, that is worth the opportunity of getting minor leaguers that are you're never going to see. This was a trade deadline that nobody gave up anything of note. Maybe the Astros when they overpaid for
there were a couple overpays
the
yesterday.
They overpaid for the Cooch, and they. But I still don't even think they gave up a top 100 prospect. They gave up like their fifth prospect and like their sixth, their 19th.
And look, the Rangers, they had an opportunity to move definitely the biggest name at the deadline that would have gotten moved in Eovaldi, and probably from a prominence and a name standpoint, like, I mean, you're talking about the Rangers could have moved three of the top five. So regardless of what you want to throw out there about what was moved, we have no idea what it would have been for Eovaldi, because Eovaldi could have been the biggest name that was moved. And you could have been at the top of the trade market.
I don't know whether this was a PR move, whether this was a leak, whether it was an empty speech to the team, but Buster Olney was on TV yesterday with the ESPN coverage, and he said the Rangers are going for it. And Chris Young gave a fire and brimstone speech to the team 1 month ago. And they were giving him all this credit that he's a player, and other GMs who are not players do not have this type of aggressiveness. And he just understands and he gets it. Ken Rosenthal, with an hour to go in the deadline, said they were still looking for a bat. They were still looking for a hitter, and we did not end up getting it. So I don't know whether that was just a talk from CY to get the guys believing a month ago. He knows he can go in there and say, guys, we exhausted every opportunity. No one wants to help out the champs because they know how dangerous you guys really are. You've underachieved, but you're really dangerous. But the point of it all is a lot of talk, a lot of bluster for a reliever.
Yeah, and it's I've seen this movie before. This is the Mavericks for 5 years in the later Dirk years just refusing to just even in one season say, let's just miss the playoffs this year and try and position ourselves better for next year. It's the absolute refusal to say they wanted to give up on any single season where Dirk was still here. And that's where the Rangers are at in this particular season. They don't want to give up on a single season at this point. And I know we've heard the argument, Mike, Jared, both have said similar things about the idea of like, well, there's something to be said for, like, you know, establishing a winning culture. Yeah, you're fighting your ass off to go to be below 500 right now and play completely inconsistent baseball. That should tell you that this isn't the year. This isn't the one. And if you want to establish a winning culture, build towards next season and beyond. Do something about it.
I get what you're saying. I do. I understand.
It feels like negligence.
It's not negligence.
It does.
It's not, because again, all you literally need is to find a way in, and they're 4.5 out. And they're only 4 in the loss column.
Pitching's been the problem for them?
No.
Nope. Exactly. So I don't care. I don't care about the DeGrom and Eovaldi. They can't hit. We've talked about it since May. They've lost like more games than anybody in Major League Baseball when they allow 3 runs or fewer.
Yeah, I understand. But when you're talking about going in the postseason, you're only going to be throwing. They may actually go into a postseason series and just throw 3 starters, and they theoretically could. Now they won't, because DeGrom, they're not going to be putting him on short rest. But we've seen teams do that.
DeGrom could have allowed 2 runs and struck out 16 last night, and he loses that game.
That you're talking about one game.
No, I'm talking about 24 games this year where they don't score.
Cody Bradford gave up the blast to Tommy Pham, so welcome back, Cody Bradford. Max Scherzer lasted just 4 innings, allowing 3 runs on 4 hits. He struck out 5 and walked 1, and the Rangers lost for the 4th time in their last 5 games. We will ask Brett Boone at 9:20 this morning what he thinks the Rangers should have done, because you're going to have a lot of people, and they were on TV yesterday as well, saying, you're 3.5. You're 3.5 games back. You cannot. I'm doing the Tim Kurchin kind of right there at 4 o'clock in the morning. You cannot go ahead and run from that. You got to go ahead and attack. And then you can also say, I've watched and listened to this team every single game of the season. I know what they are. So that was Lance Lynn on the mound as the Rangers end up losing. 52-56 is the record. What else happened in the West last night? Well, the Seattle Mariners, they broke their little losing streak. They got a W. The Astros have now lost three in a row. So you're 4.5 games back in the West. The Astros, they're ping-ponging right now at the top of the division with Seattle in the armpit.
Well, see, if the Rangers have offensive problems, what does Seattle have? Who's third to worst in runs scored for the year? Like, that is terrible for them.
Third to worst in the AL?
In Major League Baseball.
Oh.
The Rangers are 17th in runs scored. Like, you would much rather
have... Sweet, barely bottom half of the league.
You would much rather have... three frontline starters in the playoffs, or two frontline starters in the playoffs, and a league average offense than the best offense and a league average starting staff in a postseason series. You'd much rather have that.
Yeah, I mean, look, they've scored 30 more runs than the Mariners this year, and they've also allowed about 60 more. So, I mean, things balance.
In the postseason, when you're not throwing back-end starters... There's no Andrew Heaney going or Michael Lorenzen in the postseason.
I don't know. I feel completely insane that this is not a more common opinion from people. And I don't know if it's still a high off of what happened last October, or it's given people an irrational belief of just like, well, we pulled a rabbit out of our head, Jason Witten style, once before. We'll be able to do it again this year. No, like, there's a limit to what this baseball team is. And for 3-4 months now, they've shown you, we don't hit, we don't score, and there's nothing indicative. Instead of looking at it and going, these are going to click, guys are going to click into place, there needs to be a question of, look back at last year, did you have about four guys hit career years? Because that's what the evidence shows us right now. And if that's the case, they're not going to click into that place they were at last year.
Other moves around the league. A.J. Preller was getting all the... He's Howie Roseman.
He will make a move on you.
He also wins over the media. I mean, they threw him a parade yesterday when they got Tanner Scott. So Tanner Scott to the Padres. The Dodgers get Jack Flaherty from Detroit, and Garrett Crochet not traded.
Nope.
Not traded out of Chicago.
Yeah, they're going to try to move him in the offseason. But, you know, there was a sticking point that we talked about yesterday about him wanting a deal immediately and an innings limit, and that was just a major sticking point. And the White Sox were like, you know, we'll trade you, but we're not gonna like kind of hold off and just take less for you, you know. And that was one of the issues with him. But you know, San Diego, all, you know, they get Martin Perez, and I mean, they just did a lot of things yesterday. So this was a busy deadline, not a lot of names. On this deadline, but there's a lot of teams that took part, a lot of players moved over the last week or so.
Josh Young returned to the Rangers lineup. He was hitting seventh and playing third base. He ended up with a hit last night, and Jacob DeGrom says he's confident he will pitch and contribute to the Rangers this season after a 45-pitch throwing session that happened yesterday. So there we go. That's everything you need to know. Anything else with the deadline that I'm leaving out? Missed opportunities, overpay, a name that moved, a name that didn't move.
You know, the one that didn't move was Crochet. But you know, Baltimore, they added and they subtracted. They also got Eloy Jimenez from the White Sox, who was a time. There was a time where he was like the next big thing, or one of the next big things. He was a very highly touted prospect. Those Keith Laws and Kylie McDaniels used to rave about him. But yeah, your two biggest names, you know, they outside of Jack Flaherty yesterday, Jorge Soler moved a couple days ago, and so did Jazz Chisholm about a week ago. And really, that was it.
Jazz is knocking the cover off the ball since he got to New York. They had a note yesterday that he's the second player in Major League history to hit four home runs in his first three games with a new team in the middle of the season. He had a multi-homer game.
They're acting like this is like a city culture fit, like Showtime. Jazz Chisholm is made for a stage, and he's out there in New York. He's using Aaron Judge's bat to hit these home runs out there. So right now it is a perfect fit because all I've seen, I don't know, I need to reconfigure my social media because I'm getting nothing but Commanders highlights every day, WFAN every day, AMC, I'm fine with that, with the movies, go movie theaters, but every Yankees store, every WFAN is about the New York Yankees collapsing. Every single one is about them absolutely falling apart. And here's Jazz Chisholm to maybe save the day.
Aren't they like 9 games under 500 since Dak put on the Aaron Judge jersey?
Oh, here you go.
I think that's when the skid started, or it was right around there. Jazz is still Jazz at the end of the day, and that's going to start rubbing people the wrong way. Right now, they're all happy with it. Did you see what he did the other night against the Red Sox when he stole third?
Yeah.
This dude stole third with nobody covering it, up 5 in the 9th inning. And everybody's like, look at the awareness. And do you know what his awareness was? The reason nobody was covering it is because he had just got done being examined by the trainer after he was slow getting up at second base. So everybody just kind of dispersed. And then he, I'm just going to run over and steal third, up 5 in the 9th. I would have thought the Yankees fans and their baseball snobbery would have been a little more like, come on, Jazz, don't do that.
This is one of those things, like, Sean, the culture fit of New York is there, but it's not the right team. Because that team, they're pretty stuffy. They're kind of anti-fun.
All right, we got Josh Jung back, and we also have Trayvon Diggs back. Do we also have the next great Dallas Cowboys offensive lineman? Y'all, this was a fun practice to talk about, and we'll do it next. Live from Cowboys camp in Oxnard, it's Sean, RJ, and Bobby with the 6 a.m. Club. We go inside the star right here on The Fan.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, Metroplex. Shout out to the 6 a.m. Club. Sean, RJ, and Bobby live in Oxnard, California through the end of the week. Brought to you by the on-time experts, Best Buy Windows and Siding, and you're watching on the Uber One Fan Cam. Hopefully watching with the awesome numbers y'all are putting up this week on YouTube, the Fan Cam, and Twitch. Yesterday, Cowboys practice. First one with the pads on. Trayvon Diggs back with the team, but they're going to work him in smartly, not involved in yesterday's practice. We had Tyler Guyton, Mozzie Smith, RJ on Trey Lance watch, and everything else you guys want to know, you can text on the Franklin Franco Injury Attorney text line.
Do you think we're going to be able to get more people on the Fan Cam this morning than were in the bleachers yesterday for practice?
It's not a good deal.
Mike Leslie finally took the photo. Finally put it out there.
That must have been the first second he noticed, by the way, because generally anything that'll cause stir and problems, Mike Leslie's going to jump all over.
I think today could be not an all-time great, but a hell of a performance from Bobby Belt on the radio show today.
Could be.
I'm sensing the camp frustration, like getting towards the end.
Yeah.
It's like when these guys start hitting each other and fighting with each other. This is how Bobby's doing with his takes. And hopefully not too much negativity.
The pushback on social media yesterday was, I mean, Mike Leslie said it was robust over the weekend. It was the word he used, that Mike used.
Mike said it was a robust crowd?
Over the weekend. I mean, I thought the weekend crowds were fine. They were fine.
They were still low.
I think they were a little low. Maybe they dispersed things better with not just at the bleachers over there, but around the entire complex. But I thought they were still a little bit lower than normal.
This was Zeke.
The weekday is the low ones.
This was Zeke with Clarence Hill. Unfortunately, Clarence's laugh takes over this clip. This was Zeke being asked, and him asking, where's everybody at?
You said less fans here. Why do you think that is?
No, I don't know. It's just I feel like normally, like the first couple of days, the camp would be packed, but I don't know why.
And look, everyone but like one or two like Mickey Spagnuolo-type fans out there, like the diehard homers. Everyone is saying good. It's about time. Mm. This is what they get. So people are taking great pleasure, at least on my timelines and social media accounts, in these bleachers being empty instead of Jerry and company getting nonstop support for not only just coming up short, but this offseason tricking us with the all-in. That's the way the sentiment is. That's the feel right now.
Yeah, and the other thing with the crowd, it's like, you know, people bringing up, well, it's It's expensive to travel out here. I never got the feeling these were Texans flying out here for camp. I got the feeling these were local Californians who just made the journey from L.A., from Santa Barbara, from Lompoc. I mean, like, I never thought they were like people from like DFW or San Antonio or like, guys, let's make a trip out to Oxnard.
That's why the, I mean, that's why they come out here, is because they feel like they have a base out here.
Yeah.
And they feel like they can continue to establish it, and they want to hold their footprint. And I think anybody who generally has come out here in years past is probably the type of individual with some disposable income to come travel out to California and hang out for a week most of the time. So I don't think that's enough of an explanation to say that's the reason why there seems to be, I don't even know what the estimate would be, hundreds less than typical at these practices.
I would still be surprised, though, if you told me before we came out here that, you know, California fans would turn their back on mm-hmm. Jerry and company because of the offseason. I would still think that they would view it as a once-a-year thing. Let's go out and see Micah Parsons and Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb.
For the final time, where you can see them all together.
That's right. So that continues to be a story out here.
Over on Cowboys Reddit, where the Mike Leslie photo was shared, here are the top replies on Reddit. Sadly, this would seem to be the only thing that really bothers Jerry in a meaningful way. Yes, yes, let the apathy flow through you. Good. This is what the organization needs. It is universally great. Love it. It's so happy to see people are not accepting what the Cowboys are doing.
I can't wait to see what type of attendance number they come up with.
Have we ever seen number attendance numbers? Like, have there?
Yeah, at the end of camp, typically.
Well, they have those little things we walk through, right?
I saw them. These two guys yesterday didn't walk through the turnstile. They accidentally went off to the side, and the Oxnard worker, they're like, "Oh, sorry about that." The Oxnard worker goes, "No problem," and he goes, "Durn," and he like rolls it twice. So they definitely are keeping track.
Yeah. Someone's gonna be out there rolling that thing like this, like crazy at the end of the camp every day.
All right, let's talk about practice, because they were put on the pads for the first time, and Bobby, you had your absolute clear standout.
Yeah, it was Tyler Guyton. When they put on the pads, he was not with the first team right away. It was Chuma Edoga, and it wasn't even subbing in from there. It wasn't even Tyler Guyton. When somebody would sub in with the first team, it was Awesome Richards. Edoga ends up getting hurt a little bit, get a little banged up, and was pulled off to the side, was working with the trainer. And during that point, it was Tyler Guyton then stepping in with the first team. I was really disappointed because I had told you guys leading into practice, like, the only thing I wanted to get was Guyton versus Parsons one-on-ones. And when they were doing offensive line and defensive line drills, they moved Guyton on the other end of the field, and he didn't get a chance. So I didn't think we were going to get anything with Parsons yesterday. And it was still somewhat limited because, boy, they are moving Micah around a lot on defense in these practices. Micah is not in the same place anytime. There's a lot of different times where DeMarcus Lawrence is on the ground and Micah Parsons is standing up behind him, and they're rushing on the same side. And so he's moving around doing a lot of different things. But we got a good 4 or 5 reps yesterday of Guyton versus Parsons, and Micah couldn't do a thing. And
it was impressive.
It was very impressive. That dude is so athletic, Tyler Guyton, and so strong.
And so big.
And yeah, he's
a monster.
Massive. And so it's one of those things where when you see him out there, it's like, man, there's going to be some bumps and bruises along the way. He had, I think, 2 or 3 straight reps early in practice with the second team where he just missed his assignment. He got up and he did he was the clapper. He's the guy who you never want to be the guy after play-ins who goes and does that whole thing, and he did 3 of those in a row. And so early on in practice, it was not looking like a great day, but when the time came and he needed to stand up across from Micah Parsons, he was dominant. Micah could do absolutely nothing. It was starting to frustrate him. And, of course, I saw already there was a little bit of the covering fire from some Micah fans who jumped on there. And there were 2 takes he got yesterday. Micah's going half speed. He's not even trying to beat him. Or, boy, well, this doesn't make me feel good about Tyler Guyton. This is concerning. What's wrong with Micah? Why is Micah not beating him? Micah is clearly having problems.
Tyler Smith, I thought, gave John Machota a great quote after practice on Guyton. I've been truly impressed. It's not very often that you find a human being who measures how he does. 6'7", 330, and has light feet and can just move and just bully dudes. When he really becomes confident and gets the playbook down and does all that stuff, the sky is truly the limit. Confident guy. He knows the tools he has. He knows how rare they are. Just a matter of time before he solidifies things, and he's playing at that truly elite level. So Tyler Guyton really standing out yesterday out here at practice.
There are some teams who just know how to draft certain positions, and then this is the one that this one knows how to draft offensive line.
Yeah,
and it's at least in the early rounds they can pinpoint a blue chip player on the offensive line. They can pinpoint who the guys are not going to be great on the offensive line in the first round. They just do. And it's a fool's errand to question that at this point.
Who was the last offensive lineman they took in the first three rounds who wasn't at least solid? Chaz Green a decade ago? Jacob Rogers, which is 20 years ago. Guyton looked fantastic yesterday. Beebe looked improved. That was encouraging. Man, if you get Tyler Smith talking about, boy, you don't normally see people that big, that light on their feet. That's what we say about Tyler Smith being 6'5 and 325 and moving the way he does. That left side of the offensive line can be the biggest, strongest, most athletic side of an offensive line in the NFL if things click into place.
And I will focus on paying attention to Tyler Smith and Mozzie Smith, because that's what I was focused on. And, man, the Tolo saw what I saw when it came with the Mozzie video. I don't know whether this is Tyler Smith being awesome or Mozzie Smith playing in quicksand. Mozzie got controlled on these two reps, but, man, it looked like he was running half speed. Not that he wasn't even trying. Like, I didn't see any, like, explosion. He got dominated in the reps. I thought he just was like, dee-dee-dee, okay, let's go back to the huddle. Like, it looked a little lackadaisical. It looked like a lack of power and explosion, and it looked like a lack of dog. That's what I saw watching Mozzie against Tyler. Maybe Tyler Smith is just going to be that great.
Does it remind you at all of the name we threw out earlier this week? Does it remind you at all of Tristan Hill at this point?
Well, here's where it reminds me of Tristan Hill. I would be out of here at practice, and I'd have to remind myself to watch and look for Tristan Hill.
He couldn't
Hill.
Just flash for you.
Yeah, and out here, I like had to remind myself, Mozzie's a name we need to talk about. Mozzie's a name to watch. Now, again, it's a little bit different when the pads are not on and they're not truly hitting, but in focusing in on that yesterday, I was like, oh, man, I do not feel good. I do not feel good about Mozzie Smith moving forward, but you know, that's a couple of reps that I videoed and that I watched.
And that sounds like, I mean, when you hear us talk about, man, Tyler Smith dominating Mozzie Smith or Tyler Guyton.
Now, Patrick Walker would say I'm wrong, DallasCowboys.com.
Patrick Walker has been a fan of what he's seen from Mozzie Smith to this point. But when we talk about Mozzie struggling against Tyler, Micah struggling against Tyler Guyton, it sounds like the defense really struggled and the offense had a great day. The defense dominated the offense yesterday. I felt like they weren't moving the ball really effectively at all. One of the big takeaways I had was, dear God, you need CeeDee Lamb back here, because they have no weapons when CeeDee Lamb is not out of practice.
Steven Jones gave an update to San Antonio radio on both the contracts. Quote, right now the ball is in Dak's court, and we are waiting to hear from them. We keep having multiple exchanges with CD. He actually sent us something late Sunday. We continue to grind away on it. I would characterize both negotiations as very cordial and upbeat. We're optimistic that we'll continue to work towards getting something done. So the ball's in Dak's court to respond to something that they've thrown out, and CD's people have thrown their counteroffer towards the Joneses. I have never recalled Stephen Jones giving this type of update of the back and forth of whose counter it is, who's sent the latest information. I've never recalled that.
Pressure. He feels pressure.
They're negotiating through the public. Simple as that. It seems like they're negotiating through the public. It's at this point, it's like, guys, fans just want to hear it get that's done. You know, or in some cases with Dak, they want to hear it's not done. You know, with Lamb, with Micah, I mean, just about everybody wants to see it done. And I think most want to see it done with Dak, too, because you want your team to – what you don't want is having a bunch of guys out there on one-year deals playing selfish football.
All right, so there it is, Inside the Star, edition one this morning here. Hump Day is taking place. Oh, thank you, little Ollie Bear. Coming up next, we have RJ Choppy's Olympic update. People are not washing their hands. The Caitlin Clark regret. Why is the United States so cheap when it comes to the medal money? Pedal to the metal, edition three, is next on 105.3 The Fan. We'll take you around the rest of the NFL at 7 o'clock. And Bobby's enemy says the Cowboys are the eighth best team in the NFC, following up on what he said yesterday.
That Mike Leslie.
About Dak Prescott. It'd be funny if Mike Leslie took off his sweater vest and strangled you with it.
He's going to have Dale Hansen beat me up.
Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, and Bobby Belt out here in Oxnard, California. Thanks to the Tolos for turning it on, leaving it on. And we are powered by Guardian Caps, Best Buy Windows and Siding, and Sagamore Spirit Rye Whiskey. Pedal to the metal.
Man, the U.S. just continuing to dominate over in Paris.
USA.
In Paris. 26 medals. They lead the medal count. Now, China and Japan are leading the overall gold count with 7 each. France and Great Britain with 6. And the U.S. just with 4 golds. A lot of silvers, a lot of bronzes. 11 silvers, 11 bronzes. But the U.S. with 26 medals leading the way. Now, one of the golds they do have is the gymnastics team. The U.S. gymnastics team, the women's gymnastics team, absolutely wrecked shop yesterday in Paris, dominating the all-around. They win. Their margin of victory over second-place Italy was as large as Italy's margin over the eighth-place team.
Wow. Whoa.
Damn.
So 171 points to 165, and then the eighth-place squad, Japan, had 159.
What do they call themselves?
So, Simone Biles was asked what they call themselves.
Who Bobby was crushing on during the commercial break.
Asking everybody, is she's Simone cute. Biles attractive? I think she's very attractive.
Didn't know you had that brought us up in you.
Yeah. they call themselves the F Around and Find Out Five.
Whoa.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
F Around and what?
And Find Out Five. There's five of them.
The F Round of Find Out Five.
Yeah, so the FAFO.
Stupid.
FAFO. FAFO.
Come
FAFO,
on.
FAFO.
It's way too long.
That was, FAFO. That was the nickname I gave to the Twisties in 2020. F Around and Find Out.
I see what you did there.
I'm sorry. Yesterday, the whole narrative, the redemptive arc of Simone Biles, I thought was a little, that was a little much.
Yeah, the F Around and Find Out Five isn't quite the dream team from the rhyming standpoint, but it's a name. Yeah, I didn't quite get the redemption aspect of it. I mean, this team always wins. Like, they're always
you didn't
the
get
best.
The redemption aspect of it.
No, she...
You forget what
from
happened.
Her, I'm talking about from the team in general, right? Like, they're always the best. I mean, they knew they were going to win.
No, but that was the narrative yesterday. It was the redemptive arc of Simone Biles. It's like, I don't know that the 11th hour bailing in 2020 is something that I would consider a redemptive arc.
You, of all people, should be supporting her the most. Because what she did is something that you would do. All the things that she was dealing with upstairs or emotionally, that's you like coming back to the restaurant or coming back to the bar. That's what Simone Biles did yesterday and at these Olympics. Because you would have rolled out and picked up your gym bag and left as well.
And thrown your
same stuff.
Wings.
So
he
yeah.
would have thrown his chicken wings.
Wouldn't be eating chicken wings if I was in the middle of the Olympics. Okay.
Well, maybe after you're done, right? After you competed and you're not on your diet anymore, you might have done that. Now, a lot of people were taking jabs at Simone Biles' hair because she had a nice, like, nice bun, but it kind of got messy at the top, right?
Mm.
And she explained what happened. First of all, screw the Paris Olympics. Y'all with your stupid climate. Okay, y'all trying to save the environment one 90-degree bedroom at a time. Now, I'm all for that, but my goodness, guys, this poor girl said there's no AC in the Olympic Village. They get them on a bus to go 45 minutes from the hotel, Olympic Village, to the site because the traffic took 45 minutes and road closures. There was no AC on the bus. It was 90 degrees outside and humid and no air conditioning on the bus. And she's like, my hair got messy. Like, how do you have world-class athletes and no AC?
It's like your room, right?
No, it got cold. It finally, it was on for 24 hours a day, for like six straight days, and it finally got down to 66 degrees.
Because you were not feeling the AC?
I was not feeling it, and then it got down, and now I am feeling the AC.
It's probably all the bourbon that was flowing through your veins when your fiance was out here. And yesterday, I could tell, I'm starting to think you got a light tolerance. You're not Bobby levels, but this stuff hits you hard.
I do not have a light tolerance. I dunk my liver in alcohol.
Yeah.
That's not a light tolerance. That's an overdoing of it.
Yeah, no. I would not say it's a light tolerance. I drink more than anybody at the station.
If I have one drink, I don't get buzzed.
That's not what I'm saying. You're both misunderstanding, which isn't surprising, whatever. You can't comprehend it. When the liquor hits your systems, it hits you all harder. Like,
but it's the amount.
No.
Yeah, because you
know. No, my brother, the same thing. Like, my brother, he can't have three drinks. His third drink on him hits him harder.
Do you think if you drank the way I drink, don't you think you'd be feeling the same sort of way?
Chugging it?
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, I don't know the same sort of way, but yes. It's not an insult.
Well,
your body's your body.
No, no, I also,
your body's not a wonderland.
It's an insult to toxically masculine
pre-game.
Guys like
I
us.
I also pregame.
That's the thing. I don't know.
Yeah,
I could tell you were.
Yeah, I also that's my issue. I will not go anywhere. I won't go to Costco without pregame.
Are you going to have any bourbon left for Red to take on?
Well, yeah, I went and bought more last night.
Okay,
I'm just buying it left and right. Yeah, and like the whole life is a party, right? Life is a wonderland. Life is a party. Isn't that what John Cochran said? That's a highway. He said life is a highway.
Yeah, when you're down there and your eyes are half closed off your first drink, that's the impression I'm getting, but I didn't know that you are chugging liquor upstairs by yourself beforehand, so I retracted that.
If I have to deal with this over here...
You don't have to, because he's not showing up to any dinners.
I'm going to dinner. So.
Back to the Olympics.
So, back to the Olympics.
I can't wait for Friday's show. God, the mighty Brubin. You're going to see me throwing roundhouse combos.
You're going to be impressed.
You should wait. You should wait. You should poison me so I'm out sick Friday.
Ooh, I'm going to have chicken wings at the ready.
Let's head over to rugby. Women's rugby, the Sevens, they're called the U.S. Sevens.
Seven.
They don't usually win a ton of medals, but they use a 94-yard buzzer beater to beat Australia. Australia.
I watched this buzzer beater.
Yeah?
Yeah, I didn't understand what the hell was going on.
Me neither.
But they picked it up and ran, 85 yards.
94, 85, they just kept running. And I don't know what it means. They say it has something to do with football and you know, like, I don't know. I don't get it, man.
My brother was listening when I said his alcohol. Hey, same thing for my mother too, man. If that second glass of red wine just hits her different. It's the way people's bodies. It's the way they absorb.
So
body shaming.
There's a girl on this team named Alona Marr. Now, Alona Marr I've seen her all over social media. She's a beast, right? She's big time, very active on social media. She's 5'10", 200 pounds. Okay, 5'10", 200. Someone on Twitter went at her with her body fat percentage, saying, I bet you this girl's got a BMI of 30%. And she went on social media just to single out and destroy this person.
I chatted with my dietitian because I go off of, you know, facts and not just what pops up here, you know, like you do. And we talked about BMI, and we talked about how it really isn't helpful for athletes. BMI doesn't tell you much. It just tells you what your height and weight and what that equals. I've said it before, I'm 5'10", 200 pounds. And I have this is an estimate, but about 170 pounds of lean mass on me. Do that math in your head. You probably can't. That's pretty crazy, right? And that BMI doesn't really tell you what I can do. It doesn't tell you what I do in the field, how fit I am. It's just a couple numbers put together. It doesn't tell you how much muscle I have or anything like that. So, yeah, I do have a BMI of 30. I am considered overweight. But alas, I'm going to the Olympics and you're not.
Damn.
There's also some rugby player who like arm wrestled Jason Kelce.
I saw that.
Really, really, really hard time with this girl with the arm wrestling.
Yeah.
He may have even cheated.
Monica McNutt is eating that up.
They're saying Monica McNutt?
Yeah, I don't know. That just seems like something she'd be really jazzed about.
Oh. Yeah. That
don't make too random a references, Bobby.
Oh, that's not random at all. ESPN's putting her in our face every day.
Yeah, so they're saying that he grabbed the table. So he was cheating. So there's Alona Mar putting her in, put that guy in his place. I want you all. Do you want to do the payout, or do you want to save that?
I want the payout.
All right. Here's this is the payout. The Olympic Committee for the United States is only paying for a gold medal, $37,000 to these athletes. $37,000 to these athletes. Chad Ochocinco and Shannon Sharpe are pledging their support to all the athletes who are going to win gold medals.
How much are individual gold medals worth in each country by territory? The U.S.
Wait, we only get $37,000?
We should at least $200,000. Hey, no allow. If you win the 100-meter gold, me and Ocho, $25,000 apiece.
Bet. You know I don't like to spend no money.
You too, Shakari.
You get that 100.
Nephew, hey, Rye, you win the gold, $25,000. Noah Lyles trained 4 years for 9 seconds.
Noah, we got you. Oh, Sid.
Oh, the hurdle, yeah.
You might as well mail Sid her check now.
Yeah, that's $100,000.
We good.
I'll pay $50,000 any American to break a world record. I don't give a damn what the event is.
Hold on.
Out of my pocket.
I got 50. Here go $50,000 right here. Sometimes you need a little motivation, right? I got another 50 right here. We not playing. $37,000. You done bust your ass for 4 years straight to represent our country, and the payout saying thank you for the work you put in is $37,000. Come on, man.
Singapore pays $730,000, $737,000 to be exact, to win a gold medal. If you win a gold medal, you get paid $737,000.
And where's this money? I have a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Where's this money coming from?
The Olympic Committee.
Okay, and who gives the money to the committee?
They raise it. They raise money throughout sponsorships, like, you know, when they're sponsored by Nike or whoever. Yeah.
Do we not think that $700,000 is a little excessive for winning a gold medal?
Yeah, and is that 737 in whatever their currency is, or that's U.S. dollars?
From my understanding, it's in U.S. dollars. They're just all fresh.
But so I mean, how
France,
many golds is Singapore grand. Winning?
Exactly.
But still, I've always wondered, I'm like, okay, how many of these competitors, like, do they have other jobs? Like, are they like the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders?
A lot of them do. Like, they do some of the U.S. work, like the archery or fencing. They probably have other jobs.
Like,
I doubt Noah Lyles has another job.
When Shakari Richardson wins her track and field event, that money is coming. How is she getting compensated? I'm talking about U.S. competition.
Like in the Olympics? Like
no, U.S. competition. Like,
she won a track event.
A random event, non-Olympics.
I don't know. I don't know how. I don't know what that. She gets sponsorships, like endorsements and stuff.
Yeah.
Like Spain's $100,000. U.S. $37,000. Italy is $200,000. Germany is $21,000.
Like Americans all just took this. They went into competitive mode of.
Yeah.
Wait a second. We're not paying six figures for our gold medals.
Right.
How many gold medals has Singapore won in the history of the Olympics? Do you think?
Three.
One. That might be worth $700,000 if you get him a second.
Norway, zero. Kazakhstan, they give you a three-room apartment. If you win a gold medal, they give you a three-room apartment.
With ants or without ants?
Without ants. Morocco, $220,000. I don't know. I just think that it's like incredibly low. I think they should get like $10 million bucks for winning a gold medal.
That's a lot of money to dole out.
It's supposed to be for the pride. It's supposed to be for the spirit of competition.
That's why we call
this it's supposed
pride
to be for
month.
Your country.
It is.
And you want $10 million? $1 million?
All right, I'll do a million. How about that?
No, that's too much. That's too much, too.
Is 37 too low?
No.
So Shannon and Ocho are pledging what?
If you set an Olympic record, like $25,000. For an Olympic or a world record or something.
That's
like that.
Cool of them and smart.
And very smart. I doubt they're going to pony that money up themselves. They'll get one of their sponsors to help kick in.
Does Major League Baseball have an NFL problem after yesterday's trade deadline? And is the next Dak Prescott on the Chicago Bears right now? That's next. Live from California, Sean, RJ, and Bobby continuing on The Fan. We'll take you around the rest of the NFL at 7 o'clock. And Bobby's enemy says the Cowboys are the 8th best team in the NFC, following up on what he said yesterday.
That Mike Leslie.
About Dak Prescott. It'd be funny if Mike Leslie took off his sweater vest and strangled you with it.
He's going to have Dale Hansen beat me up.
Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, and Bobby Belt out here in Oxnard, California. Thanks to the Tolos for turning it on, leaving it on. And we are powered by Guardian Caps, Best Buy Windows and Siding, and Sagamore Spirit Rye Whiskey. Pedal to the metal.
Man, the U.S. just continuing to dominate over in Paris.
USA.
In Paris. 26 USA. Medals. They lead the medal count. Now, China and Japan are leading the overall gold count with 7 each. France and Great Britain with 6. And the U.S. just with 4 golds. A lot of silvers, a lot of bronzes. 11 silvers, 11 bronzes. But the U.S. with 26 medals leading the way. Now, one of the golds they do have is the gymnastics team. The U.S. gymnastics team, the women's gymnastics team, absolutely wrecked shop yesterday in Paris, dominating the all-around. They win. Their margin of victory over second-place Italy was as large as Italy's margin over the eighth-place team.
Wow. Whoa.
Damn.
So 171 points to 165, and then the eighth-place squad, Japan, had 159.
What do they call themselves?
So, Simone Biles was asked what they call themselves.
Who Bobby was crushing on during the commercial break.
Asking everybody, is she's Simone cute. Biles attractive? I think she's very attractive.
Didn't know you had that brought us up in you.
Yeah. they call themselves the F Around and Find Out Five.
Rubens. Whoa.
Yeah.
F Around and what?
And Find Out Five. There's five of them.
The F Round of Find Out Five.
Yeah, so the FAFO.
Stupid.
FAFO. FAFO.
Come
FAFO,
on. It's FAFO. Way too long.
That was FAFO. The nickname. FAFO. That was the nickname I gave to the Twisties in 2020. F Around and Find Out.
I see what you did there.
I'm sorry. Yesterday, the whole narrative, the redemptive arc of Simone Biles, I thought was a little. That was a little much.
Yeah, the F Around and Find Out Five isn't quite the dream team from the rhyming standpoint, but it's a name. Yeah, I didn't quite get the redemption aspect of it. I mean, this team always wins. Like, they're always
you didn't
the
get
best.
The redemption aspect of it.
No, she...
You the, forget what
from
happened.
Her, I'm talking about from the team in general, right? Like, they're always the best. I mean, they knew they were going to win.
No, but that was the narrative yesterday. It was the redemptive arc of Simone Biles. It's like, I don't know that the 11th hour bailing in 2020 is something that I would consider a redemptive arc.
You, of all people, should be supporting her the most. Because what she did is something that you would do. All the things that she was dealing with upstairs or emotionally, that's you like coming back to the restaurant or coming back to the bar. That's what Simone Biles did yesterday and at these Olympics. Because you would have rolled out and picked up your gym bag and left as
and,
well.
And thrown your
same stuff.
Wings.
So
he
yeah,
would have thrown his chicken wings. Just
wouldn't be eating chicken wings if I was in the middle of the Olympics. Okay.
Well, maybe after you're done, right? After you competed and you're not on your diet anymore, you might have done that. Now, a lot of people were taking jabs at Simone Biles' hair because she had a nice, like, nice bun, but it kind of got messy at the top, right?
Hmm.
And she explained what happened. First of all, screw the Paris Olympics. Y'all with your stupid climate. Okay, y'all trying to save the environment one 90-degree bedroom at a time. Now, I'm all for that, but my goodness, guys, this poor girl said there's no AC in the Olympic Village. They get them on a bus to go 45 minutes from the hotel, Olympic Village, to the site because the traffic took 45 minutes and road closures. There was no AC on the bus. It was 90 degrees outside and humid.
Yeah.
And no air conditioning on the bus. And she's like, my hair got messy. Like, how do you have world-class athletes and no AC?
It's like your room, right?
No, it got cold. It finally, it was on for 24 hours a day for like 6 straight days, and it finally got down to 66 degrees.
Because you were not feeling the AC?
I was not feeling it, and then it got down, and now I am feeling the AC.
It's probably all the bourbon that was flowing through your veins when your fiance was out here. And yesterday, I could tell, I'm starting to think you got a light tolerance. You're not Bobby levels, but this stuff hits you hard.
I do not have a light tolerance. I dunk my liver in alcohol.
Yeah.
That's not a light tolerance. That's an overdoing of it.
Yeah, no. I would not say it's a light tolerance. I drink more than anybody at the station.
If I have one drink, I don't get buzzed.
That's not what I'm saying. You're both misunderstanding, which isn't surprising, whatever. You can't comprehend it. When the liquor hits your systems, it hits you all harder. Like,
but it's the amount.
No.
Yeah, because you
know. No, my brother, the same thing. Like, my brother, he can't have three drinks. His third drink on him hits him harder.
Do you think if you drank the way I drink, don't you think you'd be feeling the same sort of way?
Chugging it?
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, I don't know the same sort of way, but yes. It's not an insult.
Well,
your body's your body.
No, I also,
your body's not a wonderland.
It's an insult to toxically masculine
pre-game.
Guys like
I
us.
I also pregame.
That's the thing. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, I could tell you were.
Yeah, I also that's my issue. I will not go anywhere. I won't go to Costco without pregame.
Are you going to have any bourbon left for Red to take on?
Well, yeah, I went and bought more last night.
Okay,
I'm just buying it left and right. Yeah, and, like, the whole life is a party, right? Life is a wonderland. Life is a party. Isn't that what John Cochran said? That's a highway. He said life is a highway.
Yeah, when you're down there and your eyes are half closed off your first drink, that's the impression I'm getting, but I didn't know that you are chugging liquor upstairs by yourself beforehand, so I retracted that.
If I have to deal with this over here...
You don't have to, because he's not showing up to any dinners.
I'm going to dinner. So.
Back to the Olympics.
So, back to the Olympics.
I can't wait for Friday's show. God almighty, Brubin. You're going to see me throwing roundhouse combos.
You're going to be impressed.
you should wait. You should wait. You should poison me so I'm out sick Friday.
Ooh, I'm going to have chicken wings at the ready.
Let's head over to rugby. Women's rugby, the sevens, they're called the U.S. sevens.
Seven.
They don't usually win a ton of medals, but they use a 94-yard buzzer beater to beat Australia. Australia.
I watched this buzzer beater.
Yeah?
Yeah, I didn't understand what the hell was going on.
Me neither.
But they picked it up and ran, 85 yards.
94, 85, they just kept running. And I don't know what it means. They say it has something to do with football and you know, like, I don't know. I don't get it, man.
My brother was listening when I said his alcohol. Hey, same thing for my mother too, man. If she that second glass of red wine just hits her different. It's the way people's bodies. It's the way they absorb.
So
body shame.
There's a girl on this team named Alona Marr. Now, Alona Marr I've seen her all over social media. She's a beast, right? She's a big, big time, very active on social media. She's 5'10", 200 pounds. Okay, 5'10", 200. Someone on Twitter went at her with her body fat percentage, saying, I bet you this girl's got a BMI of 30%. And she went on social media just to single out and destroy this person.
I chatted with my dietitian because I go off of, you know, facts and not just what pops up here, you know, like you do. And we talked about BMI and we talked about how it really isn't helpful for athletes. BMI doesn't tell you much. It just tells you what your height and weight and what that equals. I've said it before, I'm 5'10", 200 pounds. And I have this is an estimate, but about 170 pounds of lean mass on me. Do that math in your head. You probably can't. That's pretty crazy, right? And that BMI doesn't really tell you what I can do. It doesn't tell you what I do in the field, how fit I am. It's just a couple numbers put together. It doesn't tell you how much muscle I have or anything like that. So, yeah, I do have a BMI of 30. I am considered overweight. But alas, I'm going to the Olympics and you're not.
Damn.
There's also some rugby player who, like, arm wrestled Jason Kelce.
I saw that.
Really, really, really hard time with this girl with the arm wrestling.
Yeah.
He may have even cheated.
Monica McNutt is eating that up.
They're saying Monica McNutt?
Yeah, I don't know. That just seems like something she'd be really jazzed about.
Oh. Yeah. That,
don't make too random a references, Bobby.
Oh, that's not random at all. ESPN's putting her in our face every day.
Yeah, so they're saying that he grabbed the table. So he was cheating. So there's Alona Marr putting that guy in his place. I want you all. Do you want to do the payout, or do you want to save that?
I want the payout.
All right. This is the payout. The Olympic Committee for the United States is only paying for a gold medal, $37,000 to these athletes. 37 $10,000 to these athletes. Chad Ochocinco and Shannon Sharp are pledging their support to all the athletes who are going to win gold medals.
How much are individual gold medals worth in each country by territory? The U.S.
Wait, we only get $37,000?
We should at least $200,000. Hey, Noah Lau, if you win the 100-meter gold, me and Ocho, $25,000 apiece.
Bet. You know, I don't like to spend no money.
You too, Sha'Carri.
You get that 100.
Nephew, hey, Rye, you win the gold, $25,000. Noah Lyles trained 4 years for 9 seconds.
Noah, we got you. Oh, Sid.
Oh, the hurdle, yeah.
You might as well mail Sid her check now.
Yeah, that's 100K.
We good.
I'll pay $50,000 any American to break a world record. I don't give a damn what the event is.
Hold on.
Out of my pocket.
I got 50. Here go $50,000 right here. Sometimes you need a little motivation, right? I got another 50 right here. We not playing. $37,000. You done bust your ass for 4 years straight to represent our country, and the payout saying thank you for the work you put in is $37,000. Come on, man.
Singapore pays $730,000, $737,000 to be exact, to win a gold medal. If you win a gold medal, you get paid $737,000.
And where's this money? I have a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Where's this money coming from?
The Olympic Committee.
Okay, and who gives the money to the committee?
They raise it. They raise money throughout sponsorships, like, you know, when they're sponsored by Nike or whoever. Yeah.
Do we not think that $700,000 is a little excessive for winning a gold medal?
Yeah, and is that 737 in whatever their currency is, or that's U.S. dollars?
From my understanding, it's in U.S. dollars. They're just all fret.
But so I mean, how many golds is Singapore winning?
Exactly.
But still, I've always wondered. I'm like, okay, how many of these competitors, like? Do they have other jobs? Like, are they like the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders?
A lot of them do. Like, they do some of the U.S. work, like the archery or fencing. They probably have other jobs.
Like,
Noah Lyles has another job.
When Sha'Carri Richardson wins her track and field event, that money is coming. How is she getting compensated? I'm talking about U.S. competition.
Like in the Olympics,
no U.S. competition, like.
She was a
random event, non-Olympics.
I don't know. I don't know how. I don't know what that. She gets sponsorships, like endorsements and stuff.
Yeah.
I just Spain's $100,000. U.S. $37,000. Italy is $200,000. Germany is $21,000.
Like Americans all just took this. They went into competitive mode of.
Yeah.
Wait a second. We're not paying six figures for our gold medals.
Right. How many gold medals has Singapore won in the history of the Olympics? Do you think?
Three.
One. That might be worth $700,000 if you get him a second.
Norway, zero. Kazakhstan, they give you a three-room apartment. If you win a gold medal, they give you a three-room apartment.
With ants or without ants?
Without ants. Morocco, $220,000. I don't know. I just think that it's like incredibly low. I think they should get like $10 million for winning a gold medal.
That's a lot of money to dole out.
It's supposed to be for the pride. It's supposed to be for the spirit of competition.
That's why we call
it's supposed
pride
to be for
month.
Your country.
It is.
And you want $10 million? $1 million?
All right, I'll do $1 million. How about that?
That's too much. That's too much, too.
Is 37 too low?
No.
So Shannon and Ocho are pledging what?
If you set an Olympic record, like $25,000. For Olympic or a world record or something.
That's cool of them and smart.
And very smart. Because I doubt they're going to pony that money up themselves. They'll get one of their sponsors to help kick in.
Does Major League Baseball have an NFL problem after yesterday's trade deadline? And is the next Dak Prescott on the Chicago Bears right now? That's next. Live from California, Sean, RJ, and Bobby continuing on The Fan.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.